Welcome back, guys. We've got episode 44 tonight of the Health Project, where we've got a really fun and exciting episode tonight covering all things gut health, gut microbiome, what we can do to really heal our in gut integrity, little steps on a daily basis to optimize our health and well-being, which when it comes to our health and well-being, the gut health is critical, and especially for something that I'm extremely passionate about, and that's mental health, because as you might have heard during the podcast episodes, there is a connection between the gut and the brain. So the gut-brain connection, it is a thing, and unfortunately, if we don't put some steps in place to really optimize our gut, we can unfortunately have some serious side effects when it comes to our mental health and mental well-being. So I really enjoyed having a chat with Cribben Governor, as our guest tonight for this episode. He's a food scientist and also the founder of a extremely popular and growing business in Nourish Me Organics, which is an Australian gut health store. So if you jump on Instagram, I certainly recommend you do. His page there has got about 40,000 followers. So he's certainly a wealth of knowledge. He's got his own podcast as well, which I believe is one of the ranked in terms of gut health. It's number one in Australia. So his own podcast is certainly worth a listener. And as I said, I thoroughly enjoyed having a chat with Cribben tonight. Really good episode. A lot of these things we cover, I do on a daily basis, because I know how important it is for my health and my mental well-being to look after your gut. I know if I don't look after my gut, I do start to find that I am a lot more stressed and anxious, which are some of the traps that I've spoken about that I fell into a few years back when I did really suffer with a few mental health issues. So I really hope you enjoy this episode. If you've got any questions, as per normal, just fire away, shoot them through. And if you've got any questions for Cribben, feel free to please send them through to me and I'll make sure to get in contact with him. So enjoy tonight's episode and I'll see you back next week for episode 45. I want to talk about the gut-brain connection. I'm doing a bit of work with Headspace. I'm in a lot of mental health clients and I know I've gone through a lot of anxiety and those kind of things myself. From reading your story, I'm a little bit familiar with yours. What is the science behind the gut-brain connection? Is healing the gut in terms of mental health and these kind of issues?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's big because the gut and the brain is very intimately connected. And the science is still emerging and we're still early days in terms of the microbiome research. But what we do know is that the gut has its own nervous system. So it's called the enteric nervous system. Right. And the gut and the brain is connected via the vagus nerve. Mm-hmm. So the gut is almost—it has the intelligence, and Michael Mosley is a famous guy, and he talks about this in the Clever Guts book. But it's got almost as much intelligence as a small cat. So if you sever the vagus nerve, the gut can still function and still operate. Wow. And the other main point with the gut is that it produces a lot of the neurotransmitters in the body. So it produces 90% of serotonin. Yeah. 50% of dopamine, which is another important neurotransmitter, and also GABA. So a lot of these neurotransmitters, which impact how we feel, are produced in the gut.
Yeah,
primarily, but the interaction between the gut bacteria and also the gut epithelial cells. Mm. And the research is still very early. Don't get me wrong. There's a lot more to be done. We don't understand the mechanisms fully as yet. Mm. We know anecdotally, if you take the microbiome of a depressed person and you put that in the mice, you can trigger these symptoms of anxiety and depression in a mouse. So especially with fecal transplants becoming very popular, I think the guys that are involved in this process now are aware that depression is a big factor when choosing donors. Mm. So if you're going to transplant fecal matter from, you know, a person with depression to a normal person, people have to be very careful.
Right. I want to ask them, well, what can we do about gut health? What are some steps each of us can make to start to optimize our microbiome, our gut lining, these kind of things?
Yeah, that's a good question, Jed. My knowledge and my advice have evolved quite substantially over the years, but I think the easiest thing is just really start at the one-on-one level, which is to simply just clean up your diet. So the first thing is, and it's pretty easy. I mean, it's just going to a farmer's market rather than a supermarket and buying really fresh produce as best that you can afford. So if you can afford organic, obviously choose organic.
Yep.
Other than that, just fresh produce, you know, fresh vegetables, lots of plant foods, lots of fiber, and really learn to cook from scratch. So that's the number one 101 tip that I can give to improve your gut health is really just taking out all the things that can irritate the gut and create dysfunction. So just really clean eating and really trying to eat lots of variety in vegetables. So that's the easy tip.
So you're do you focus on macro and micronutrients? I know a lot of people, a lot of the experts on the low carb approach and shifting towards the high fat side of things. Where does that fit with in terms of gut health?
That's a good question. I think the science has evolved to a point now where we know that there's not a one size fits all. The microbiome, which is the trillions and trillions of bacteria, yeast, fungi, parasites, viruses that all live in the gut, it's almost like a fingerprint. So everyone is very unique. And this is a massive metabolic organ, a 2 kilo metabolic organ that is very unique to each person. And if there's dysbiosis, if there's dysfunction, if there's an imbalance of the wrong types of bacteria, certain dietary approaches might not be good for everyone. So what I really recommend is start with, if you can afford it, definitely start with a whole genome sequencing of a fecal sample, just to understand firstly what your fingerprint is. And then obviously people, nutritionists and naturopaths and whatnot will also look at the genomic impacts. And do you have certain gene polymorphisms which lend itself to not being ideal for certain types of diets? That's also a factor as well. So it's important to understand, like I can speak from my own experience, I have a G6PDD polymorphism, which is, you know, really, really common. I think it's the number one gene polymorphism that evolved pretty much because in those malaria belts, having this polymorphism helped my ancestors actually survive. So whilst people were dying from malaria in those tribal regions, having this mutation in my genes, actually, it's the reason why I'm here. But the issue is that it creates a lot of dysfunction, specifically in my mitochondria and, you know, energy production, blood cells, especially when I have certain types of foods. For instance, if I have high doses of vitamin C, it can be detrimental to my health. If I have legumes, if I have fava beans, it actually creates dysfunction in my blood cells, where my blood cells literally explode. I was going to say, so in this environment where people are recommending, you know, lots of vitamin C to boost immune health, for me, it's not a good idea. But it's only because I have that knowledge on my actual genomics that I know having too much vitamin C is not great for me. And the other thing is people are saying, well, eat lots of legumes and fiber, but it's not great for me because that's detrimental. Detrimental to my blood cells, essentially.
Okay. Well, let's talk about what are some, obviously, again, it's going to be individualized for certain people. As you've just said, certain foods will work better for others. As a general rule for, let's just say, 80% of the population, let's just touch on what are some gut-friendly foods and also some foods we should look to avoid.
Good question, Jed. Eat clean, like really simple JERF. Just eat real food. So a lot of these food additives and chemicals that are used to extend shelf life to create certain properties in processed foods are now emerging to be actually quite detrimental to health, to gut health, to health in general. Sugar as well. Having excess amounts of sugar is extremely toxic to the body. And I think people are starting to realize this, that excess amounts of sugar create all sorts of negative impacts on the body. And then way too much meat consumption can be an issue as well. Definitely tempering back on eating so much meat. And definitely having more variety of the types of plant foods that we're having, and then introducing your fermented foods into the diet as well. So almost treating your fermented foods like a separate type of food.
Okay. Type. Your own category. Yeah.
So a category. So almost like thinking in each meal that I'm having, what ferment am I adding? Mm. So it could be as simple as having a bit of kefir for breakfast.
Yep.
Or you can have a side of kimchi or sauerkraut or natto on the plate as well, or tempeh. Mm. You can have a glass of water kefir or even kombucha with a meal as well. Yep. So it's just being cognizant of adding some form of ferment, because we know our fermented foods are so rich in beneficial bacteria, lots of vitamins and things that our own body can't produce. So these microbes are performing a benefit for our bodies. Definitely milk kefir is the most studied one. So I'd definitely be including that if you can tolerate dairy. Okay.
Yep. And where does bone broth fit into this equation? I know I'm a big bone broth drinker. I love it. Is bone broth something you advocate?
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. Bone broth is great, or even collagen peptides. They're all very similar in the way they work. So they're very rich in glutamine, which is a nice mineral, or nice, I should say, more almost like a peptide or a type of protein that's really beneficial for healing the gut lining. Mm. There's all sorts of other things like in bone broth that are really good for healing the gut lining. So it's and it's very easy to digest for the body, because when you're slow cooking these bones for many, many hours, it makes it a lot more digestible, easy for the body to deal with, and lots of collagen as well.
Yeah, awesome. Is there any other foods apart from the obvious? We obviously know about sugar, high amounts of saturated fat. We've touched on dairy a bit. What about things like wheat, gluten, these kind of things do we need to be careful about? And is there hidden foods that we're not sure about? A lot of vegetable oils, I've always been told, avoid canola oil, vegetable oil, these kind of things. What are some other foods we should, and what's your take on obviously gluten and wheat, as I've touched on?
Yeah, I think if you have some form of dysbiosis or a dysfunction in the gut, it is a good strategy to form some form of elimination diet, or follow some sort of elimination diet, whether it's GAPS or FODMAPs, Clever Guts. There's some very good ones out there. Mm. And it's just to take out the things that can potentially irritate the gut lining or exacerbate the issue. So what we want to do is eliminate. So you might want to eliminate dairy for a period of time, gluten, complex carbohydrates, and just follow a really simple diet, you know, like GAPS is amazing, Western Price, all that kind of stuff. Mm. Simple, taking out the irritants for a period of time. It could be a couple of months, you know, it could be up to 4 months where you're eating very simply, you know, avoiding lectins and things like that have been known to cause dysfunction in the gut.
Yeah.
Heal the gut lining, and then slowly start to introduce the things that maybe caused dysfunction or irritation in the past, but your body will be able to tolerate it once the gut lining is healed.
To the healing process, is there anything you can during the elimination stages, is there anything you can do on top of that to sort of speed up that process? Is there sort of supplements you can take, like L-glutamine, I've tried colostrum, these kind of things? What are some other strategies?
Yep. So I can talk to a couple of ones that, let me just pull up a sheet. Yeah. So there's a couple of things that we know that are scientifically based that can help heal the gut lining.
Mm-hmm.
Bear with me 1 second. So you mentioned L-glutamine. So L-glutamine is a great one. Mm-hmm. There's other things like seaweed, which is really great. So seaweed, we've got compounds in there. Mm-hmm. Definitely vitamin D. So vitamin D from things like sardines. The number one source is just going to be from sunlight.
Yeah.
Keeping your magnesium levels up is also important as well. Things like bone broth, collagen peptides, colostrum, all these have got really good data to support that they work from a scientific basis.
Right.
Things that people might not be aware of are things like flavonoids in berries and citrus fruits, Zinc is another important one. You can get that from oysters.
Mm. I want to touch on quickly why you mentioned it, fruit consumption. Mm. Obviously, outside of my mental health work, I also work as a personal trainer. A few of the experts that I've touched on, they say, beware of how much fruit, obviously, because of glucose, those kind of things. Is fruit something that we should be wary of?
I think excess consumption. Yep. I'm not an advocate for having huge amounts of fruit, especially if you are having bloating or gut dysfunction or you're very sensitive in the gut, because right. consuming fruit is going to be a source of glucose and also a sugar source, which is going to lend itself a lot to yeast overgrowth or yeast producing a lot of gas in the gut. Yeah. Yeah. So this is all going to exacerbate the amount of uncomfortableness in the gut while it's healing. So when I mention these fruits, you know, the ones that I advocate are things like berries.
Yeah.
So they're very rich in polyphenols and flavonoids, and also citrus fruits in small amounts. Mm-hmm. So all these type of fruits are not particularly overly sugary, and you're only having a relatively small amount. But the flavonoids in those fruits, particularly berries and citrus, have got good data to support that they can help with leaky gut.
Yeah, awesome.
The other one that I love is broccoli sprouts.
Okay.
So broccoli sprouts has a compound in there that's got scientific studies to show that it lowers inflammation, and it's got a particular compound called sulforaphane in there that's got lots of emerging data. Other ones that people might not be aware of is things like prebiotic acacia fiber, which helps the body produce butyrate, which is a fuel source for the gut colonic cells, which is going to help them to heal, but also to produce the adequate levels of mucus, which is the protective layers in the gut. Okay. There's some probiotic strains that people can try out. You've got Lactobacillus GG, Lactobacillus rutii FN041, and also Megaspore Biotic, which is a combination of soil-based bacteria, which also really good data to support that they help with leaky gut. And then the final one I'd add is CBD oil, which is going to be pretty massive when it comes to overall health.
Yeah, awesome. I want to touch on the broccoli sprouts and broccoli. Obviously, sulfate, properly cook your broccoli. You'd rather have your broccoli cooked as opposed to raw. Are you on the same boat, and do you have to be careful with broccoli? Because I know if I overconsume broccoli, I do notice I have a lot of bloating and gas.
Mm-hmm. Well, broccoli is a very sulfurous bacteria. It's a sulfurous vegetable, which then lends itself to the bacteria producing a lot of these sulfur-based, hydrogen sulfide-based gases in the gut. Mm. So, and cabbage is another good example of this. But what I recommend is actually broccoli sprouts.
Yeah, okay. So
the highest source of sulforaphane, which is the active that we're looking for. Yeah. I mean, broccoli in itself, if you cook it very lightly, has a decent load of sulforaphane in there.
Yeah.
But the highest level is going to be actually in the sprouts.
Yeah, okay.
Very, very easy way is just to use broccoli sprout powder. So you can just add it as a supplement, which is pretty easy to use.
I might have to give that a go.
And magnesium is another very important one, because it's involved in so many pathways. Mm. So it's just a great one to add. Mm. And my favorite source is actually dark chocolate or raw cacao powder.
Yep.
Raw cacao powder is a fermented product as well. And it's actually, if you get a good source of raw cacao, keep an eye on the dietary fiber content, because it has a truckload. Some of them can be up to like 30-40% dietary fiber.
Yeah. Yep.
Actually a great, almost like a multifaceted product, where you can get magnesium but then get a good whack of dietary fiber, which is really important as well.
Now let's talk about antidepressants, medications, these kind of things. How damaging can they be, and how can we sort of reverse the effect? And obviously if there are situations where medication does need to be taken on a regular basis, is it as simple as following the steps that we've already touched on, or what things need to change?
My take on that is that I'm a food guy, so I've got a background in food science. So my advice is all around diet.
Yeah.
I really recommend that people work with these clinicians like psychiatrists or psychologists who are experts in those fields. And really the things that I'm talking about are add-ons. So it's like, so if a psychologist or psychiatrist prescribes a particular medication, that's up to the person and their practitioner to work through those issues or work through those recommendations.
Yeah.
And what I recommend is actually using these food ideas as add-ons to that treatment. So it's not a zero-sum game.
Yeah, it's yes, that makes sense.
Using these things as like other ways to help how you feel, you know, mm-hmm. things like kefir, which are rich in tryptophan,
yeah,
or tryptophan-rich foods, they're really going to lend itself to producing serotonin and things mm-hmm. like that in the body. GABA, you know, fermented foods are very rich in GABA, which impact how you feel.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just add-ons.
Yeah.
They're not replacements.
I want to ask quickly, is there any foods that help induce sleep? Obviously, sleep's a big topic that I've touched on quite a bit on this project at hand. Is there certain foods out there I've tried kiwi, almonds, these kind of things. What are some foods that can actually help with the neurotransmitters that are important for sleep?
The number one thing that's important for your sleep is the light and dark cycle.
Yep.
So it's very important to get sunlight in the eyes early, first thing in the morning at sunrise. So up at 7:30, the first thing that I do is go out and actually get exposure on the skin, the gut, and the eyes with sunlight. Because what it does is it triggers the production of the cascade that leads to the production of serotonin. So you get POMC. POMC is an acronym for a chemical that's produced when the sunlight hits the eyes.
Yep.
And then as you progress through the day, you're eliminating bright lights, LED lights, bright screens when the sun goes down.
Mm.
So you have a proper dark exposure. So light exposure in the morning, dark exposure at night.
Mm.
Wearing blue light blocking glasses at night.
Yeah.
Allowing the conversion of then this POMC, which goes through conversion into serotonin and then eventually into melatonin.
Mm.
So the body needs to have rhythmicity to actually trigger this cascade of different compounds, which then leads itself to the production of melatonin, which is your sleep hormone.
Yeah.
Awesome. So it's not so much dietary impacts are the most important. Certainly meal timing would be very important as well.
Yep.
It's like definitely not this what I advocate is I stop eating at say about 2 or 3 PM.
Okay.
So I have a 16-hour fasting window,
but
certainly having at least 4 hours of fasting before you go to bed is really important because you're not going to be sleeping very well.
With the intermittent fasting kind of thing, is that just approach that works best for you? Or I know for me, on the opposite, I do the 16-8, but I won't eat until 2 PM, if that makes sense. Is there a science behind which approach works better, or is it just a matter of simply what works best for you?
I think it's personalized. Yeah. My rationale or my logic is that I am trying to combine intermittent fasting with circadian rhythm and rhythmicity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because my rationale, the science, my scientific thinking behind it is that if we have inherited this body, this potentially billion-year-old mechanism or machine for my ancestors. My ancestors have been pretty much being yoked to the sun and the sun and the dark cycle.
Mm.
So for me, my thinking is that if I can almost follow these ancestral patterns, the machinery is built for that. So it's just me just using the machine as it was meant to, because things like artificial lighting are relatively new constructs. So it's like I'm trying to optimize the hormones, specifically leptin, and not being resistant to leptin. Yeah. So letting the hunger kicking in normally in the morning. Mm. And then I'm thinking the ancestors most likely not going to be eating much during the nighttime.
Mm.
So that's, for me, the perfect time for my body
to go
through a fasting period.
Yeah. And I want to ask about digestion. Is there ways we can optimize our digestion? I know I've experimented with things like apple cider vinegar prior to a meal.
I put a big emphasis on just making sure I'm mindfully eating. I'm not on my phone, these kind of things. What are some other strategies that you like to advocate for?
Yeah, you're doing all the right things, Jed. I mean, not being distracted, not being stressed out, keeping away from TV, certainly not watching scary movies, anything that's going to trigger some sort of fight or flight response, not getting into arguments with people while you're eating, just being really calm. That's the 101.
Yeah.
And then using your fermented foods, things like, you know, kiwi fruits are great as well because they're very high in digestive enzymes. Okay. Pineapples are good, very high in digestive enzymes. My number one is actually miso.
Yep.
Because miso has got an abundance of proteases and amylases and natural digestive enzymes. Mm. So hence you'll see with the Japanese, they'll normally start off with a bowl of miso soup. Like to add just a teaspoon of miso on the side of my plate. Mm. Even things like kefir or sauerkraut, all these have a lot of enzymes in there, which will help the digestive process. And then just making sure you're chewing your food and being very relaxed and enjoying it. Like, food is meant to be a moment, you know, our ancestors to bond together, have a nice warm chat, connect with the family, be present with each other, enjoy the meal. Awesome. Like not taking it too seriously and just enjoying your food.
Absolutely. Being quite involved with the fitness side of things, where does, again, I'm going to refer back to gut health just for the purpose of this, where does the protein fit into this equation? A lot of my clients want to build muscle and obviously protein content for that purpose does need to increase a little bit. How is a large amount of protein going to affect gut health and what can we do about it?
Yeah, I mean, if the client has a dysbiotic gut or they're suffering from gut issues, I think protein, if you're eating protein on its own in abundance without balancing out with fiber, you can make the problem worse.
Yep.
So protein is important, very important structural compound in foods to build muscle and build all sorts of things. It's the building blocks of the body, right? But what we need to do is balance that out with enough dietary fiber. So to have your leafy green vegetables, if you're following a low carb type of protocol, you can supplement with something called acacia fiber, which is very gentle. So it's not going to be like, you know, making you bloated. It's low FODMAPs. Mm-hmm. Because what we want to do is we don't want to trigger almost like a proteolytic pathway in the gut, because this can bloom into, you know, production of hydrogen sulfide gas, methane, create a lot of issues, create constipation in the gut, slow down gut transit time, which cascades into all sorts of other issues, higher risk of colon cancer. So you want to make sure that we're actually having enough of the vegetables and fiber to balance out the protein. Mm. So I'm not suggesting go crazy on high carbs.
Yeah.
I'm just suggesting to have something that has dietary fiber.
Yeah.
So great ones are cacao powder and also something like acacia fiber, which is extremely gentle for someone following that style of diet.
Mm, I think that's great advice. And I think that really does simplify, because I think it does get too confusing out there with all the different diet approaches and all that. I think that's great advice. And just lastly, is there any, I like using the word hacks or biohacks and such that we can use for gut health, things like, I know I'm starting to look into squatty potty. Any sort of weird little hacks like this?
Mm-hmm. Squatty potties are good. I've been using a toilet stool. It's the one I use. I've been using that for many years. Mm-hmm. And that just helps you clear. It just helps you get a nice angle. It actually tilts the spine, almost like our ancestors, how they used to squat on the ground. So that just helps you to get a nice clearance in the gut without getting any kind of crooks and getting stuck in the gut and being uncomfortable. So that's one. The other hacks that I use the sunlight on my gut. So I do meditation. Meditation's a nice hack as well. I try and combine a lot of modalities in one for the sake of time. So what I do is, as a hack, I meditate with my clothes off in my backyard during the early morning parts. So I'm getting maximum amounts of light onto my gut to help modulate the gut bacteria. There's good science now coming out to say that light actually changes the gut microbiome. So we need to get light exposure on the gut itself.
Yep.
combined with meditation, which is also impacting the gut microbiome composition. Other hacks are things like jumping in the ocean. Even in the middle of winter, I'll go and do some cold therapy in the ocean.
Yep.
Combine that with hot and cold exposure through a sauna, and then, you know, in the ocean, back in the sauna, to and fro. Cold showers as well is not very powerful vagal tone exercise. So it helps that vagus nerve stimulation, which is all lending itself to good gut health as well. Red light panel is also useful during nighttime. So what it's doing is it's almost simulating us being in front of a campfire. So it's a combination of red light and infrared light. So it's like great to, so what I do is I combine that with inversion. So I have an inverter just to decompress my spine. And what I do is, as I'm inverting, I shine red light and infrared light onto my gut for about 10 minutes.
Awesome. Do you have is it Juve or is there any? Yeah, it's Juve. Yep.
Juve, the one that I have a Juve panel, but I also have a Mito HQ panel as well. Okay. But I have a feeling Mito HQ are going to be stopping, but Juve is great.
Yeah. Awesome. That pretty much covered. I was going to ask about self-care rituals, daily protocols that you put in place, but we've covered it all there. Is there any other things, morning routine? Are you including journaling, gratitude, anything like this?
Yeah. I do a gratitude. So I do the five-minute journal, but what I've done is I've created a five-minute journal. It's total Tim Ferriss inspired practice. But what I do is I use Evernote. So I do the 5-minute journal on my Evernote. So it's again, three things I'm grateful for, my basic goals for the day, then a reflection of the previous day, you know, and the wins and the things I can improve on. And that just helps me focus. And obviously having a transcendental daily meditation practice as well. Yoga is very good for mindfulness and gut health as well.
Perfect.
And obviously in terms of my exercise, I do a high intensity, really short, sharp, 30-minute with kettlebells primarily, or very heavy kind of one set exercises, just really get around deadlifts, push, you know, the chest exercises, squats, and what's the other one? Squats, deadlifts, and pull-ups.
Okay. Yeah. So
all the basic movements.
Yep. Keep it compound, keep it short and sharp, high intensity. Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. How does exercise affect the gut? Is that something we're going to be aware of, a lot of exercise on the gut permeability and things like this?
Totally. Because especially in this environment where we're all trying to maximize our immune functions, having too much high intensity, long periods of exercise is going to weaken the immune system.
Right.
So what we're going to do is, because as you exercise, your energy production cell or organelles inside the cells are called mitochondria.
Yeah.
So mitochondria produce reactive oxygen species, which is almost like a byproduct, but they're signaling molecules. So if the ROS production is kind of out of check, or if it's excessive, it can cause weaknesses in the gut, so more permeability, but also weaknesses in immune function. So what we want to do is really kind of taper out the high intensity to a short amount, and then just couple that with simple things like yoga and walking. So certainly I only train high intensity maybe once a week at this time. Now I'm more cognizant of my immune health, so I might do it once every 2 weeks. Daily walking, so I go for a walk like 15-20 minutes twice a day. So not staying sedentary, but just doing more walking type exercises on a daily basis.
Awesome. I think that's great advice. And that's very powerful. And I know I'm the same view with exercise, even as a personal trainer, where a lot of personal trainers fall under the root of it's got to be an hour in the gym, lifting weights and all that. And I've shifted to more the opposite of you, where short bursts throughout the day, little things like moving, even standing up as opposed to sitting down more often, little things like that. Well, we've covered the last couple of questions. We're going to be on morning routine and self-care rituals, but you covered it exceptionally well throughout your responses there. So I want to say a big thanks, Priman. As I said at the start, you're a huge inspiration of mine. I follow the work you do closely, and you've changed my life for the better. So I really appreciate you joining me today and all the work you do.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Jed.
fitness, nutrition, sleep, longevity, performance, fat loss, and all the keys to a life of health, happiness, and success. I'm Jed Zimmer, your host, and welcome to The Health Project.